Welcome to episode 7 of My Pocket Psych, the podcast all about the psychology of the workplace. Each episode focuses on aspects of work that can sometimes cause us problems, explain why that's the case, and offer some advice on what you can do about it. We'll highlight the areas of working life where you can make a positive change. We want to help you move from surviving work to thriving at work. We'll avoid fads and nonsense, we'll minimize the psychobabble. We'll involve the experts and we'll share it all with you in a sensible and accessible way. I'm Dr. Richard McKinnon, Managing Director of WorkLife Psych, and here's my co-host, Pilar Ortiz. Hi, Pilar.
Hey, Richard. Hello, listeners. Richard, I was going to ask you what we're going to be talking about today, but maybe we could leave it till later.
Shall we? Should we just do it tomorrow? It's so much easier.
Sorry, listeners, bad joke on my part. Please introduce, please let the listeners know, Richard, what we're going to be talking about today.
You beat me to it by seconds. Oh. That's all I can say. Just seconds. Sorry. Yeah, if you haven't been able to guess, we're going to talk about procrastination. Today and for the next few episodes, we're going to look at the topic of productivity, the theme. And it's something that comes up in most conversations I have in organizations. I might work one-on-one with someone in coaching, and how they get things done, how they deal with their workload comes up really frequently. And I often find myself running workshops on themes that relate to productivity. And all you need to do is Google the word productivity, and you'll see both the level of interest in it, but also it's an industry.
Yes, it is.
and so not all of it's great, I think. You know, it's not all great advice or applicable. So maybe let's start with the very beginning about what are we talking about when we talk about productivity. And when I talk to groups, I define productivity as simply doing the right thing at the right time in the right way. So this means we need to focus on how we work as well as when we work. So it's not time management, that's a common misunderstanding. And it's not about volume of work. It is about the right thing in the right way at the right time. So, you know, there is an element of scheduling, but there's a lot of decision making. There's a lot of prioritizing. There's taking a step back and looking at your workload rather than diving in, or as we've said previously, just jumping on the next email that comes into your inbox.
And I think always when I hear productivity, I always think of and I see people looking for quick fixes, whereas what you've said, it's not just about getting things done quickly and managing our time, but actually all the stuff around prioritization and, like you were saying, whether it's the right thing to do. That's quite deep thinking.
It is, because not all of the work that we have to do is created equally, you know. Some tasks that we might need to do could be done in a minute or two and not take much of our concentration, while others would take a lot more of our time and require a lot of concentration and combinations of all of the above. And for some of us, we have to really factor in the physical energy that we have as well as the mental energy and the time. So we're moving with a few factors, and we'll talk in a later episode about how we can balance those three things to get a really good result. But one of the things that's worth talking about before we even talk about that is what stops us from getting things done. And when I talk about procrastination, I talk about the self-imposed delays that sabotage our own success. So we're doing this to ourselves. That's the first thing to realize.
Yes, and it's a very personal thing, isn't it? And people do it, I suppose, do we do it subconsciously? Or maybe I've hopped us into the topic. Let me just go back a bit.
No, it's fine. And that's such a huge loaded question. But maybe we'll just do a bit of follow-up from last time before we dive into that. So basically, our series of discussions on psychological flexibility is now finished formally, but I know we'll return to it. I know we'll get questions about it, and I'm talking to people about it offline, if you like, and I'm getting feedback about it offline, and it's great to hear that people are both listening and enjoying, and they're putting it into practice. So if you want to listen to when we've discussed psychological flexibility, it's spread across three conversations over episodes 3, 4, and 5. And actually, if you go to the blog, which is worklifepsych.com/blog, we have a series of posts there. And what I'll do is I'll pop those into the show notes, but there's a category in the blog, psychological flexibility, and all of the writing I've been doing about that over the last 6 months or so is contained there. And of course, the guide to developing your psychological flexibility is still available for download, and it's free. And you can get that from worklifepsych.com/psychological flexibility, all one word. And so there's a ton of resources there. There really are. So have a look through that stuff, and please do get in touch with your feedback, with your questions, if you want to know anything more about that. And actually, I put out a Twitter poll today, which will be closed by the time you hear this. This is for a couple of days, but to gauge interest in a webinar about psychological flexibility, something that's online and a bit more interactive, maybe for when you've read these things, you've read the post, you've read the guide, and you have some questions for a practitioner like me. So anyway, come back to us with your questions. We're going to move on. And for the next few episodes of the podcast, we're going to talk about all things productivity, starting with procrastination.
Yay.
Thought we'd get it out of the way.
Yes. So do you want to tell us what you mean by procrastination? I think maybe that's a nice place to start, isn't it?
It is, because it's funny. It's one of those words that people use quite loosely, like many terms. You know, people talk about, well, I'm procrastinating about that, or they're procrastinating. It's really obvious. But actually, let's make the distinction between procrastinating and delaying work for a good reason, or rescheduling work for a good reason. You know, our priorities shift really quickly during any working day. So it might be that the thing we planned to work on is now not as urgent, or is not as important, or something even more urgent and important has come down the pipe. So those kinds of delays and rescheduling are not procrastination. Procrastination is basically when we delay working on something until it's so late that we're under an enormous amount of pressure and there's no rational reason for doing so. So procrastination is a very irrational activity, even though we might have lots of things we would say to ourselves and others that sound rational. And that's it's quite tough to deal with. It's a habit that we built up over a long time, but it's also, there's a cognitive element to it, the thinking element, what we say to ourselves about it. And I tell you one thing, human beings are amazing at convincing themselves not to do something. We come up with so many good stories for ourselves. So fundamentally, procrastination is the irrational delaying of work, not a sensible rescheduling or even not doing something because it no longer needs to be done.
Mm. Could I say also, at the same time as irrational, could it be also that it's not deliberate, or that we haven't made that decision? Because as you're talking, one thing I'm thinking is that sometimes there are reasons why we're putting it off, but we might not be aware of them. I think, or are you going to come into that a bit later?
Yeah, no, at a level, you're absolutely right. We might have a level of fear associated with the task, or fear associated with the completion of the task and what other people will think about it. So we might today be fearing a future failure. And so if we don't want to experience that, well, it's better to not make a start. Now, that doesn't make sense when you think about it rationally, but that is a common pattern for people engaging in procrastination. And so we don't sit down. You're right. We don't sit down and say, now I'm going to procrastinate. We say, now I'm going to tidy my desk. And now I'm going to clean my monitor, or now I'm going to empty my inbox. But actually, the big, difficult, challenging, or embarrassing task, or boring task, or whatever it is still sitting there, and we're working around it rather than do it. And so it's not a pleasant experience when we're honest with ourselves, or when someone asks us challenging questions. It's quite uncomfortable to talk about why you're not doing something that rational you would say, wow, you should have made a start a few days ago. Hurry up. And what you're saying is, no, I'll leave it till the last minute because, you know, that's the best way to do it.
Yeah, I'm finding it very interesting that you mentioned fear and how much of that fear might be there without us noticing it or without us listening to it.
Absolutely. So we've talked a lot over the last few episodes about being mindful and thinking about our own thinking And part, you know, if you use your values to help you make a decision as to what you'll do next, then, you know, that might be one way of honestly avoiding the procrastination. But there's some quite counterintuitive reasons we might procrastinate. A common reason people might point to is that's a boring thing, so I don't want to do that. But we can fall down a trap of fear and anxiety about a task. And so rather than logically starting sooner to give ourselves more time to do a good job, we sort of push it out into the future, thereby giving us less time, increasing the pressure and then the fear. But another pattern is one of perfectionism. And it's really interesting because you might think someone with perfectionist tendencies would start at exactly the right time and put exactly the right amount of effort into something. But actually, someone who is a bit of a perfectionist may say, actually, it's not just the right day to make a start on this today. And I want it to be great. In fact, I want it to be perfect. So I'll do it tomorrow. And then tomorrow, the stars are not aligned the way they would hope. Maybe they've come in late. Maybe they're not feeling that motivated. And so this perfectionism actually serves the same purpose. It pushes it into the future where we can't create more time. And so we're merely robbing ourselves of time to work on this task or this project. And it's a really interesting pattern that I see in coaches who would never see themselves as procrastinators because they're quite methodical in their approach. And they may be very conscientious in delivering, but what they're doing is putting themselves under a lot of pressure at the last minute to do a fabulous job, a perfect job in their mind. And that's a really, that's a real pain point there to get stuck. You know, with 24 hours to go, you haven't started and you have huge high standards on your own work. And now what do you do? So then we think about the emotions associated with procrastination. There's a lot of guilt. And there's a lot of shame, and sometimes that spills over into anger at yourself and anger at others for not telling you and anger at the world. It's just not a pleasant place to be. It's not simply about time. It's about the consequences of how we manage our workload through time, but all through this process, time is ebbing away. So we're running out of it. Mm-hmm. So it's not a pleasant experience at all.
I find it fascinating that looking at the reasons and how it can be at opposite ends from being afraid that we are not going to do the job really well to knowing that we're going to fail, to fear. And I wonder, is there sometimes also maybe a fear of success? So knowing that at the back of your mind, if you do this, there's a lot more coming afterwards.
Yes, because if you can't get a sense of completion and enjoy having done something, it doesn't really help you move on to the next big thing you're going to be working on. And there may as well be a fear of, if I do this, then I have to do the next thing. And I know that's even more difficult. Yeah. Or others' expectations of me will be even higher if I do this. But a lot of the time, we're not having that conversation with ourselves. And so one of the things that we can do is be really honest with ourselves about what's really going on inside. What are we really saying to ourselves about it? And let's remember, delaying the start of an important piece of work is not necessarily procrastination if it gives us some thinking time, if there's a creative element to it, if there's necessary preparation. That's not procrastination, as long as we have a plan for completion. And for much of what we do, particularly if you could be categorized as a knowledge worker, you need to prepare and you need to think it through, not dive in halfway through. Another thing that we've talked about as part of our review of psychological flexibility is this concept of experiential avoidance. And really that is, what is it you're trying to avoid by procrastinating? That's the core question. And the answer might be the fear. It might be the guilt. It might be the denial that this is something that you absolutely need to do and it won't have pleasant consequences. Mm. You know, you could picture someone procrastinating on having a very difficult conversation with a colleague and putting it off and putting it off, not because they think they've got more time, but because they don't want to experience it. And so they're already feeling the icky emotions associated with that. And it hasn't happened yet. And that gives them the motivation to push it into the future even more. And all the time, the situation is not improving.
Yeah. Almost a catch-22 also. It's then really difficult to get out. You need more energy to get out of that.
It is. So being honest about that is a really good first step. And being honest about the fact that the discomfort associated with it, the unpleasant emotion, the unpleasant consequences of the relationship with this person in that example, they're not life-threatening. They are just discomfort. And so what's the higher order win here? Maybe it's improvement in that person's behavior or performance at work, and you're living in line with your values. So moving away from how will I feel about that to what's what I want to accomplish with that. And it's another thing that we can focus on is imagine how good it's going to feel when you get this done. That can be a motivating factor. That can almost be like a magnet pulling you through time. I'm going to feel great when I get this done. I feel guilty now. I don't want to feel guilty. So how can I get to the end point where I will feel good about the completion of this task or this project?
And even before we get to that stage, is there a, what are your thoughts on noticing that this is happening? Because sometimes I've seen, for example, so I'll give you an example of what procrastination I do. Mm-hmm. And actually it's very interesting because I of course rationalize it for myself. So I don't know what the reasons are for procrastinating, but I notice that I leave something till the end of the day until I've got a very short window to do it in, and then I'm ready to do it. And I've noticed that sometimes I need to what I've done during the time that I'm waiting is it's really come to the front of my mind. And what I need is a small space of time so I don't think about it because it just needs to be done. Mm-hmm. But I start to notice that before I get to that task, I start to open LinkedIn, and sometimes I do it. And then sometimes I notice it and I go, okay, 10 more minutes of this, and then that's it. So what are other things that people might notice that are, I wouldn't say alarm bells because I don't really want to use this language, but what are some of the signs that people are procrastinating that they might notice?
Well, that's, you know, what you've outlined is a really good example. And let's remember the other important element of procrastination. It's procrastination when there are consequences. If there's no serious consequences, then it doesn't really matter that you're doing it. So we need to remember that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not about I'm procrastinating turning on Game of Thrones. Well, that doesn't matter because if you don't get to see it, it's no big deal. But I'm procrastinating doing my tax return. Yeah. Well, there's going to be consequences there. Mm-hmm. Now I'm wondering why I picked that example.
Because it's the end of the year, listeners.
And it's something that I procrastinate about. Yeah, so there's lots of things we might look out for. I mean, I've mentioned the perfectionism. So if you have this sort of irrational need to have things just so before you do it, well, what's wrong with making a start when everything isn't just so? How's that going to harm things? You're giving yourself more time by starting. So always question the, well, what would happen if I did it differently? And what's the downside of that? And what's so bad about that? There's a very common pattern where people do leave things till the last minute because they will say to themselves and they will say to everyone around them, I work much better under stress.
Yes.
And so they have managed to survive over years, maybe decades, by putting themselves in very, very pressured, from a time perspective and a quality perspective, situation. And they survive each time. But, you know, like we say in the beginning of each of these episodes, do you want to survive work? Is that what you're there to do just by the skin of your teeth under that enormous pressure? Or is there another way that you might do it? And I would always say to someone, and I just said it yesterday when I mentioned we were going to be recording this, this person said, well, of course, I work a lot better under pressure. And the response is always, how do you know that? Have you tried another way of working? Because until you've given yourself a bit more time and you've compared your outputs and how you feel about doing the work, then you can't really legitimately say, I always work better under pressure. The second bit to do with that, and it's so important in the contemporary workplace, is that we are interdependent with others.
Yes.
None of us is in a bubble. And so if you say, I work best, you know, last minute, well, does that help for people that work with you? They may be waiting on your output. They may be waiting on your response. And just you getting it done last minute may not help the next person in the chain or who's, you know, in the system where you work. So that's another thing to be mindful of, the system. It's not just you. And the third thing is you're assuming that your week is going to pan out the way you thought it would. And so that I'm leaving myself Friday afternoon. Well, you know what? The CEO could come along and ask you to do something. And there's your Friday afternoon gone. And now you've burned through all that time. Your little space of getting it done has also gone. What happens now? So there's a certainty about my ability to do things, a certainty about the future, and a kind of an almost selfishness about as long as I feel okay about it at the end, that's my main motivator here. So we need to broaden the conversation, step back from the individual focus, and think about what if? What if someone else is off sick that day, the person I need to speak to? What if more work comes in? What if there's a crisis? And this stuff happens all the time. So being realistic about what generally happens in the working week can help bring a finer tune to it. Something else that I talk to coaches about a lot is our inability to plan from a time perspective. So the calendar that you have is a work of creative fiction at the beginning of the week, really. A lot of what you put in your calendar either doesn't happen or it doesn't happen at that point in time, and lots of other things that do happen don't appear in your calendar. So if you were to spend some time, just a couple of weeks maybe, tracking where your time goes, you'll be able to see patterns, potentially, of procrastination and see that time where you inadvertently wasted that time, or you did something of such low importance that you maybe feel bad about it. And it's the I feel bad about having done that, that might bring someone to their senses that there's a pattern in there of procrastination.
Mm. I'm also thinking in the context of the workplace, because I think that's the most important thing, is that we might like leaving stuff to the last minute because, as you say, because we think we, as individuals, work best, but the effect that that has on everyone else, because we might see as creating the best conditions for us, but actually to everyone else is just procrastinating. But also that awareness of something that just came to mind is in realizing when we procrastinate, sometimes maybe we find that we procrastinate more over activities that have to do maybe with other people. I don't know, even one specific person. I think that would be quite an interesting insight if that happened to someone.
And it does. I mean, we just need to think about the work and you know, sometimes other people are work, you know, let's be honest, but the interactions are difficult.
Yeah.
It's all about how we feel about the thing we are going to do. And if we don't feel positively oriented towards it, we need to put a bit of effort to get it done. And it could be that we think what needs to be done is boring. We could have very rebellious thoughts about it's not my job anyway, or it's unfair that I've been asked to do it, so I'm just going to leave it to the last minute. And that's my way of showing them what I think about this task. Where adult you would more likely say, that's not helping you get it done, though, is it? You know, and they don't really care about what you think. It just needs doing. And actually, you might be sabotaging your reputation and your performance review to make a kind of a teenager style point, a bit of rebellion. And all of these conversations could be much more productive if they were had with someone else. But when they're not, it turns into that kind of dysfunctional, unhelpful thinking that if we act on it, and we listen to those emotions and act on those emotions, then it can turn into self-defeating procrastination. There are so many routes to procrastination. There are many, many routes. And, you know, it may not have been pointed out to us. You know, someone may not have seen us procrastinating. And for some people, so we haven't had that feedback. And for some people, it's almost like a badge of honor.
Yeah.
Look at what I can achieve even with 2 hours. Look how talented I am when I, you know, everything is compressed into 2 hours. And look, I've saved the day almost like a hero. That there's a lot of wins in that. But there's also a lot of losses when you think about the pressure and the emotional cost. And what if the person who is procrastinating doesn't find it as easy as they predict? Then they have to scrabble around for resources, for support. Their frustration may bubble over into unwanted emotions and unwanted behaviors. And so they have an impact on other people that's unpleasant, not just disorganized, but genuinely unpleasant.
Mm. as always, we're like uncovering this thing, the procrastination, which we talk about so lightly sometimes, and going into the depth and complexity of it. Listeners, tell us about your own behaviors or behaviors you've observed in others, or any thoughts you have. Worklifepsych.com. There's a contact form there. It'd be really, really great to know. And Richard, I just want to pull out, you said a term that I think I really liked, and especially in the context of moving towards the work rather than leaving it to one side or moving away from it, which is, you said, when you feel positively oriented about it. And I prefer that a lot more than when we say that we're motivated, because it's got, because you put the word oriented in it, it's got real focus and direction. So I just wanted to pull that out. That was really interesting.
I will trademark that this evening. But it's important to use language carefully, I think, as much as we can. And so motivation can be quite a loaded term.
Yes, yes, exactly.
I mean, we use it all the time in common speech. Mm. But if we talk about the difference between feeling positive and not feeling positive about something, then we can ask ourselves questions about why we feel that way about it, and to what ends are we doing it or not doing it. It really is about honesty, and then making some changes, being prepared to put up with the discomfort of maybe boredom, doing a task we don't think is ours. That's uncomfortable, but it's not gonna harm you, or dealing with ambiguity. A lot of procrastination can stem from not being sure of the task itself, either the scope or the level of detail, or fooling ourselves that, you know, an email will suffice, when actually, if you thought about it, what the other person probably wanted was some kind of document. You know, so fooling ourselves about the scope and the complexity of the work until we begin to start it, and then we go, ah, you know what? Now this is much bigger than I thought. So one of the first things to consider when we look at procrastination, if you hear yourself in any of this description, if you recognize these patterns, think of it from two perspectives. One is what's going on inside your head. What are the things you're saying to yourself? And what are you feeling emotionally about the work? So are you talking yourself out of it? Are you telling yourself it needs to be perfect? Are you angry that you have to do it in the first place? Have a good think about that. Write that stuff down and see what it feels like to write it down, and maybe come back to it after a while. You know, put that away in a drawer and come back and have a look at it and see how you feel reading those thoughts back to yourself. And maybe what advice you would give someone else who said those things to you. You could maybe remove yourself from the situation slightly. But we also need to look at behavior, things that you can do differently. And it's more useful, I always argue, to look at both what's going on inside our mindset as well as our behaviors and habits. So the number one thing I would say to someone who is procrastinating about a given task or project is just make a start. Make any kind of start, because that can help with the inertia. It can help that giant ball roll just a little bit. And once it's rolling, it's rolling. So making some kind of a start can be useful. Now, that's a difficult one when you peel back the layers, because making a start could be the procrastination.
Yeah.
So I've started a file. I'm now going to spend 3 hours looking at the formatting of this file. You're recognizing that? Yeah. So I think anyone who's ever opened Microsoft Office to do some work will have fallen into the pit of formatting procrastination. But making a start according to a plan. So if you have clarity on what the end goal is, and you know where you need to get to, and it's been, you know, agreed by someone else if they're going to be getting the work, if you've got input and a third person would say, yes, that's what's required, then you can break that down into manageable pieces. And the making a start is the first step along that plan, not just pretend you're working on it because you've got Word open on the screen and there's a blank page. But, you know, you've made a start. You haven't until you're following steps in the plan. And those pieces could be salami thin. You know, they could be such small steps along the way. If that helps you move from complete inertia, then that's the way to do it. And make that checklist. Because there's also something quite nice about ticking things off the checklist as you work through the task. You can see your progress. You can take a break and come back. You could do the work over multiple sittings and come back and see what's next and, you know, chunk those tasks. Make a start on it, on your plan, and be as specific about those tasks as possible. So joking aside, I've worked with people one-on-one where they are procrastinating about specific tasks. And that's quite interesting. Mm-hmm. We don't generally procrastinate about everything.
Yeah.
So they're procrastinating about things. And one example I can think of, they were procrastinating from a kind of an anxiety perspective. It's a high profile thing, 4 times a year they had to write. And so what we did was break it down into a checklist of activities that would need to be done every time this report had to be written. And what we got down to was a checklist that began with open laptop, fire up Word, second one, third one, save a new document called such and such such. Save it in that folder. Next one was put in the headings that you know you're going to have to answer to. The next one was, right, begin at heading one. And it literally was this checkbox bonanza. But what that gave them was a sense of movement through the piece, a sense of achievement as they moved, and as they put it away, because it wasn't the kind of task you could do in a single sitting. They would have to get information from other people. They could just see that progress and know that they can come back to it and pick up at that point. Now, what inevitably happened was, you know, after some time, they realized they didn't need 30 tick boxes to work through. They just needed the reminder that it needed to be done. They needed to have the time set aside to do it, and then a handful of tick boxes to give them that sense of, it's not one thing. I'm working through multiple tasks here, and the output is more like a project.
Mm.
And that worked really well for them. And it's so simple. Pen and paper, no apps required.
Yeah, and I'm thinking with my pseudoscience hat on that sometimes we avoid doing things because of the energy it takes for whatever reason. So something like creating a checklist which goes to the down to the detail of open laptop even, we don't have to think about that. And that for me is, okay, we're saving some energy. And I think subconsciously that just makes the task a little bit, a little bit less energy consuming. So I wonder also there's something around that, that we just, and we're also delegating some of the decision making and the breaking down of what we need to, and thinking about what we need to do next to that list. And I love the list because you're working on the task, but actually you're not really working on the task yet. So maybe you find some energy even in creating that list. I quite like it.
Well, it's an interesting thing because you can reuse your checklist for repeating tasks. And so having done that once, you're absolutely right. You have to engage in less creative thought or problem-solving thinking because the task has been laid out before you. And there are fewer opportunities for you to stop because you don't know what to do next because effectively it's been mapped out. And I'm a massive fan of checklists. You know, checklists aren't cheating. Checklists set out the task so that something doesn't get forgotten, things get done in the correct order. And I consistently argue that checklists are a sign of professionalism. I mean, look at who uses checklists in their jobs. Pilots, surgeons, you know, people for whom error is a big deal. And there are many, many small operations within their job. So they want to get it right. They've got checklists. And so if you do something semi-regularly, and it's fairly technical, it's got lots of moving parts to it, take some time to sit down and map it out in terms of a checklist, because the next time you go to do it, you'll have a checklist and you'll work through that rather than, oh, it's this thing again. What did we do the last time? I don't remember. Who did we involve? I don't remember. Yeah. Oh, this is painful. Let's do it tomorrow. And just speaking from my own experience, which is never a good place to start.
Well,
but I eat my own dog food in this regard, in that, you know, every quarter I've got a VAT return to do. And I have a checklist that reminds me, these are the pieces of information you need to bring together. These are the places you've saved them. This is the documentation you must be able to have. So rather than me getting angry in my study at my inability to find paperwork, all I'm doing is working through the task according to the checklist on the monitor in front of me. Now, it's an important point. I don't enjoy it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't look forward to the VAT return. but I know that it won't be difficult. So it, the experience is different. Do I wish I didn't have to do it at all? Of course, I would love not to have to do that. But at the same time, I've kind of broken the back of it. I've taken the mystery out of it. And if anything, I could do just a tiny bit of it each day for 5 days and it would be done.
I've got a question about procrastination in a second, but before that, there's a book that I haven't read yet, but I've heard it mentioned so many times that it might be worth recommending here, or at least making the listeners aware, which is The Checklist Manifesto. Have you read it, Richard?
Brilliant book.
Yeah, there
Brilliant
you go.
Brilliant book.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So that was a
we'll pop that in the show notes.
Yes, yeah. A book recommendation there. And so you mentioned, and I think I know the answer to this, but you mentioned how sometimes it's very difficult to start something. With me, it's the other way around because I love starting new stuff. I start stuff very often. And then actually the moment comes later. So I think I know the answer. But what are your thoughts around what to do with that?
So, I mean, going back to the point about what are those thoughts and why are you having them after you've started? What do they sound like? Are there themes there? What's the emotion associated with them? And are you, in effect, talking yourself out of continuing what you're doing? Are you realizing there's a better way of doing things? Are you aiming for perfection or good enough? And is the start really a start? Or is it the sort of paddling around and then you're in the deeper water and then you realize, oh no,
I didn't have a plan.
I don't really like this. Yes. Yeah. And now it's a bit late and now it feels uncomfortable. So it's easier just to stop for now.
Yeah, I find it really interesting because when you mentioned before that making a start is not that great of a start if you don't have a plan. And I think I recognize that. I recognize that actually what I'm starting is I'm almost finding a little bit of high and emotion in starting something, but actually it hasn't been thought through. So like you say, it's not really a start. It's just an activity that gives me pleasure. Let's face it. So really interesting.
But wouldn't it be great to have more of those throughout the working day?
Yes.
And so the making a start, you can work at it from a very counterintuitive perspective. If it's a task that you know exactly what you need to do, you know what's required of you, and you could do it at your desk, put a timer on and give yourself 15 minutes. And you're only allowed work on it for 15 minutes. And what well may happen is that the buzzer will go off and you'll be amazed 15 minutes have passed, but you'll also be motivated to keep going because you're in the middle of it.
Yeah.
But if you say to yourself, I only have to do this for 15 minutes, then there's less of this is a huge unending task for the rest of the morning and I'm not looking forward to that. You're only thinking 15 minutes ahead. You can make a start and actually make that start. And if the buzzer goes off and you want to continue, continue.
So also what I'm thinking is what we're talking before about people who like that stress and leave things to the last minute because it gives them, I don't know, whatever it is, that adrenaline or whatever. Hey, this is a good substitute. Start earlier, but give yourself these time zones and these little stresses.
You can work in a kind of a sprint fashion and you know, replicate the positives of that, you know, without it all being done on a Friday afternoon or whenever the deadline is. You're absolutely right. And there's a really simple methodology called the Pomodoro technique that a lot of people swear by. Now, I don't say that there's tons of evidence behind all of the claims that are made, but from that thing specifically, organizing yourself to work in sprints of time where you're forced to take a break after 20 or 25 minutes and then do another 25 minutes, that you're actually at the mercy of a kitchen timer, the Pomodoro, that's the tomato. You know, so you've taken one decision-making element out of the activity, which is when do I stop and start? Well, the timer tells me that. And when the timer's clicking, I just work. And then you get regular breaks thrown into that. So I'll share a link with a website describing that. There's nothing magical about it, except it's giving you some structure to your task and breaking it up. Again, you know, it's slicing one element of it up. It's slicing the time up and illustrating for you also another thing that we're not very good at, which is estimating how long things take.
Yeah.
Never mind in the future, but how much time we've spent on something. Time can fly, as they say. So it's much harder to push something off into the future if you're really honest about both the effort and the time required. If you're fooling yourself that it's not going to take so long, then you're going to find yourself in a really difficult situation. And the other thing is to be very realistic about what you've done in the past, because it's unlikely you're going to wake up tomorrow a new person and, you know, achieve everything that you think will get done in one day if that's never happened before. So I'm not talking about lowering the bar, but I'm talking about being realistic about it, and that at no point in your career have you sat down and written an entire quarterly report in one sitting. So what have you done well? What has worked for you? Plan around maybe 10 separate sittings of shorter duration and getting input from others and lots of proofing. And, you know, don't imagine that it's going to be hugely different the next time unless you put a different process and a different plan in place.
Wonderful. Well, for me, I think this is a very good place to wrap up this first episode on productivity, Richard. But is there anything else that we want to cover?
Not today, except we'd love to hear from you if you are procrastinating, if any of this advice has been helpful, if you've put it into practice. None of these are one size fits all, and it's often a few things that can help you with that. I'd love to hear about the tasks that people do procrastinate about, because it's not everything. There's some specifics for each of us, so I'd love to know more about those. And if you've got any questions about what we said today, we'd love to hear from you as well.
And before we go, listeners, let us know of other topics that you'd like us to discuss on future episodes. We're going to be looking at productivity for a couple more episodes, but there might be something you've always wanted to know about psychology that we could cover as well, that Richard could talk about.
This is a team effort.
I can ask all the questions, listeners, that you want to hear. And if you want to hear me ask other questions, then send them through and just let us know via worklifepsych.com. Thank you very much for listening.